Welcome to the Holistic Life Summit, where we will be looking at the interrelationships of some of life's most challenging puzzle pieces, giving you tips and strategies to create a life that is happy, healthy, and whole. Please welcome your host, Life Mastery Coach, Sheila Sutherland.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Holistic Life Summit. I am so glad that you are here with us on this journey to living happier, healthier, and whole lives. In today's fast-paced and busy society, conflict seems to be everywhere, from the news that we watch to the governments that run our countries and in our own homes and in relationships. Today's guest is here to help us navigate those somewhat tense waters and to give us strategies as to how best to deal with conflict when it arises. Dr. Rob Hirshhorn is a relationship enhancement and interpersonal development specialist that coaches individuals and facilitates groups and organizations with tools designed to authentically enhance self-awareness, leadership, and team building. He outlines steps to revisit approaches to conflict resolution and enhance interpersonal relations within and outside of the office. Welcome, Rob. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So give us a little bit of your backstory and how you ended up being so passionate in helping others in regards to conflict resolution.
Well, firstly, I'd like to say that I really enjoyed how you captured at the outset for the audience what conflict is about. That was a really important description in terms of the global level, in terms of what's happening on the ground and everything in between, because that's really what we're talking about. So I appreciate that.
Nice.
So my own background, what brought me into what I'm doing, I'm assuming.
Yes.
To explore. Well, I think from a very early age, I had the opportunity, I guess, based on my personality, to really step back and observe. Just naturally, this came to me in dynamics that I was a part of, dynamics that I was exposed to. I was just very interested in people, behavior that was demonstrated, all the interpersonal, relational things that were taking place. And when that's your natural inclination, also noticing the tensions that come up with that are part of the picture. So I seem to gravitate towards that for whatever reason and be really, really interested. And that never stopped. And when tension did arise, I was always really curious about what the background to it was. Why did things necessarily need to downward spiral? And conversely, why was it that people were getting along really well? So I carried that with me. And I think part of what was interesting is that when I moved beyond just observing to chiming in every once in a while and expressing how I felt related to these dynamics, people would tell me that I seemed to say the right thing at the right time and use the right words. And that was the origin. So that goes way back. And of course, I could elaborate on where I've taken this in my life today.
Well, why do you think that people find conflict so stressful? Because, I mean, the moment you hear that word, people are like, oh, here we go.
Why do they find it so stressful? Most people are conflict avoidant.
Mm-hmm.
Most people want to, for whatever reason, and this is all of us, this is, unless we've reached such a point of this level of consciousness where, 90% of the time we just have this inner harmony, We prefer, including me, including everybody, at some level, we want to avoid conflict. And this is natural. This is actually a natural part of being human. The dynamics that we come across, that where people challenge us in ways that we're not prepared to go there, where we have to be put on the defensive, we much rather communicate in a way that is open, where people are going to be naturally receptive and welcoming and warm. And that's just not life. We have to remind ourselves that that things come into our space, so to speak, because it's part of the learning process. And just because something that we come across might be tense initially, that doesn't mean it remains that way. But it's that resistance that we have to not being recognized in the way that we want to, mm-hmm. that ends up leading us to bring our attention in. And because we have that resistance, that compounds conflict. That could bring in a downward spiral with people. So,
well, is conflict something that, you know, because we have the natural propensity to want to avoid it, I mean, can it be avoided? Or is it something that it's inevitable that it's going to arise, and it's more important in how we respond to it?
It is inevitable that it's going to arise. We can't predict most things in life, just like we can't predict the amount of times some type of conflictual dynamic might come into our space on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes we have days that are just really flowing for us, and that's, you know, conflict is not going to be there. Other days, we have several moments that are so, for some of us, gut-wrenching, that it's unfortunate. So, or it's, you know, a better way of looking at that as an opportunity. So it's so important for us to recognize that it's just a part of the picture, and it's really an opportunity for us to gain a little bit more clarity, because it's those moments of tension. It's really those moments. It's not when life is going along swimmingly, but these moments of tension that create the greatest clarity, mm-hmm. for us to refine and adapt and adjust the way we need to, and get to know ourselves and get to know life dynamics a lot more clearly.
Well, for me, I kind of think like it's just part of the human experience, you know, because if we all thought the same and believed the same, what a monotone world we would live in.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the thing. I'm really glad you expressed that, because not only can you place it in general terms, if we thought the same, if we felt the same way as other people, but very often the key thing that results in conflict is something very simple. We project onto other people, assuming that they think the same way that we do. And as soon as we, you know, very often when we're in the moment where the ego is prevalent, the ego is overtaking the way we interact, the way we receive other people, and that comes down to really that part of us that want us to be first as far as being recognized at some levels of an interaction that is just within our own little frame of reality. And when we're not received in that way that we expect to, tension arises. That's where that inner turmoil might come to the surface that spills over into what we're experiencing with other people. But it is the whole point. It is natural. Those reactions are part of the ego, but there's also the potential when we could literally pause when those things are happening and almost have this window unto ourselves to recognize the reactions that are coming through us. And then it diffuses that tendency and diffuses the potential to push somebody else's buttons and as I used the term before, downward spiral with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's almost a case of when we start having, like, say, a conflict between friends or within relations, if we could just shift from the position of feeling like we're being judged to being that maybe this is an opportunity for me to look at whatever the issue is a different way, it might help in dealing with whatever the issue is.
Exactly. And that's really the core of what's important to focus on today, what's important for people to recognize, that that feeling of being judged or disrespected or dismissed in one way or another, that's often where conflict comes to the surface, mm-hmm. because it's rooted in fear. There's a part of our brains that are trying to protect ourselves all the time. And this goes back to when we first started as human beings and in the age of the caveman, when we needed to protect ourselves and protect our families. And that was part of survival. That was part of real life survival. But we've evolved beyond that. But there's still that reptilian brain that we have that ends up taking over in times that we feel threatened, but often it's just this perception of being threatened by somebody who's not, that we feel is not allowing an opening to see us for the way we want to be seen. Mm-hmm. And then the blinders start falling in front of our eyes and we project onto the situation where we feel that we're not going to get what we want. And that's often from this lens of that fear leading to judgment, leading into what's going to happen if this person doesn't accept what I want to share in this moment. And so it's so much of these unconscious decisions that happen from moment to moment that very quickly you go from that place of fear to the other things we just talked about, that self-judgment, to then deciding that this person is not on my side. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the unconscious unraveling towards conflict that we're speaking of.
Well, you mentioned just briefly there the idea that this comes from, you know, like our ancient reptilian brain. And not to offend any of the reptile enthusiasts out there, but to me, I would kind of look at it and kind of go, you know, reptiles aren't exactly the smartest creatures out there. And I have found, like, when I, you know, because, I mean, I'm not perfect. I've fallen into this, you know, trap of all of this. And I know that when I start feeling that, you can actually feel it arise in within you, it seems like intellectual thought kind of goes out the window. Because it almost feels like you're being taken over.
Yeah, well, whether you want to call it intellectual thought in some ways where, you know, that part of our brain where we could think it more abstractly, more in complex ways, mm-hmm. Sure. But it's really that natural connection that we do have with everybody when we're in our state of beingness that is receptive and open. That's the first thing that goes out the window. There's some people that are the most brilliant in the world as far as their professions, as far as being able to express themselves and clearly they're on the top of their games, do not necessarily have the emotional intelligence or the interpersonal wherewithal in conflict-related dynamic, or we don't necessarily have to place it in conflict dynamics, just in terms of relating, just in terms of respecting people and being able to touch upon the lighter side of life. So it's there. You could place it in terms of those intellectual components, but it's really about opening oneself to being able to share a deeper experience. And we don't necessarily have to have that all the time with everybody we're coming across. But if, you know, again, no matter how brilliant somebody is, if they're defaulting to anything that brings more tension to the space, that leads to these off-putting tendencies, then that's something that really is a red flag where they need to be more aware of how they are engaging in the world. So,
well, and you had just brought it up there, the idea of emotional intelligence is something that, well, those of us in the self-development industry, we hear a lot of. Could you actually just maybe explain what that is? Like, emotional intelligence and like what we think of as like an intellect are two completely different things. But if you can just let people know, what is emotional intelligence and how does that really play out in our lives?
Yeah, absolutely. So emotional intelligence directly touches upon another way of placing emotional intelligence. You could place in the context of soft skills. So just that metaphor of soft skills, it's something that's welcoming. It's something that allows us to receive, allows us to exchange with people in a way that is co-creative. So all that to say is people that would have more of a capacity to relate in this way would be self-aware. So they as opposed to the example that I just gave, when you asked the question regarding, people's, the contrast between the reptilian brain and people's intellectual capacity. So if we have dynamics where people in a specific moment of whether you want to call it conflict or tension or just a capacity to really listen actively and be aware of what's happening in their environment, it really comes down to self-awareness. It really comes down to noticing more and more levels of subtlety in how we're interacting, how we're being received, how we're responding to people. All of these related components. And I think the word subtlety is very important, because the more and more we're self-aware, the more and more we're going to notice that will help us live this life, and not in a premeditated way, not in a way that's self-serving. If we come from a place of deep self-awareness, it'll be expansive. So much will happen in the moment that will feel spontaneous and natural, and will really enrich our lives. So the core component is self-awareness, and the counter to self-awareness is that ego state where you're always sort of gauging from a place that's ready to react. And often a place, as we said before, that comes out of fear that what's happening in my environment. It doesn't in any way, as it's lived out, it's not a pleasant way of living, mm-hmm. because people are on guard. So that's the contrast.
Well, in one of our conversations that we've done before, you had a really great visual for that side of things. Could you share that with us now?
I can indeed, because we had a great little chuckle about that the last time we were talking.
And I can't think of anything else but now when we talk about this.
I know, and I've thought about it frequently since we had that conversation, and I was so glad that it came to me in the moment. It was something that was part of a conversation that I had several years before, and it was something that was quite rich in that space, in that time. So the reference is, for those of you who are literary fans of J.R.R. Tolkien and Lord of the Rings, and for our most recent cultural reference, this has come out, of course, in the Lord of the Rings trilogy films. So in that version, as well as The Hobbit, our favorite character, who's always sort of slithering on the ground and is self-serving and has the objective of what? Of having the ring on his finger. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about somebody who's about to be wed. We're talking about Gollum from the Lord of the Rings series, who does seem to embody that reptilian brain. And so when Sheila and I were last speaking, I suggested that Gollum is a perfect representative of the ego. And I'm not sure whether you want to do an impression on air.
You can. I would butcher it, but
I do a pretty good one, but I don't feel I would. I don't feel
may not good. Translate well.
Yeah, for this type of interview, in another setting, maybe if there's a comedian in the room, or there's, you know, it would be in a different context, I think. But we could imagine, I said this the last time, those listeners who happen to be listening to the recording of this, feel free at this moment to, at the same time, access a YouTube clip of Gollum saying anything, because inevitably, it will be reflected back into that completely self-obsessed, and slithery creature that in, on one level or another, we are when we're in our ego state. So yeah.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not like hugely like into that series and whatnot. But he actually, before he became Golem, he actually had another name, didn't he? Like he was actual little person before he actually kind of transformed into this being. Well,
In the series, well, in the original book also, of course, in terms of where it comes from, he sort of represents the fallen human, mm-hmm. the down spiral of humanity, that he was, you know, and the analogy going back to the Garden of Eden and the temptation of the apple, he gave into temptation. He had it was very graphically laid out in the first movie, and of course in the book in detail, where he made the decision that he should not have, and so the result is this slithery creature that he became.
Mm-hmm. It's just an interesting, like I say, parallel when you actually look at it that way and kind of go, oh, okay, if I let my ego completely take over, that's kind of where I could end up.
Yeah, I think. I mean,
at the extreme level.
Yeah, you're not saying literally, of course.
No, won't be. No. We're all not going to live in a cave, and yeah, no. At least I hope not.
Suddenly develop these eyes that are, you know, massive and piercing, and right, we're not going to descend physically into that creature, but at one level or another in our lives, there could be quite a few problems that we create for ourselves, for lack of a better way of putting it. Mm-hmm. So, I think the Golem character is a really good analogy. What happens when we end up going down a self-serving route where we're obsessed with something in particular that we have created? And I think that really speaks to some of the challenges we have in life. And this is many of the challenges. I would say the root of the challenges, if you want to go further, we often have these constructs of how things should be, the way things should unfold, where we want to go, where we feel even more so if we want to, you know, there's a part of ourselves that goes back to that, the inner child that stamps their feet in outrage because they didn't get what they want. And that can be carried with us. And if what we've decided at some point over time does not manifest, that's when quite a bit of the conflict in our lives can come to the surface. Outside of these situations, these dynamics with other people, where there might be some type of dispute or disagreement, and that's the place that I like to start from, at different levels depending on which groups that I'm working with. But what is really happening with us? Because whatever somebody else might be demonstrating, however disrespectful it might be, however inappropriate we may rightly feel that type of behavior is, we have the only control that we have is over how we are relating to others. And the only control we have is the type of work that we commit to gain a deeper level of self-awareness. So that is the starting point.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were talking about the, you know, something that we're obsessed with, do you find that within a lot of the, you know, personal conflict that you see, that the thing that people are obsessed with is the need to be, always be right?
I think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. I think what it comes down to, and from the work with clients that I've done, the experiences that I've had, just living this life, it comes down to human needs that we have, and the work of Marshall Rosenberg and nonviolent communication is important here. All types of personality-related work that consultants or trainers do is really important as well. But if we want to really break things down in an accessible way, recognition, respect. And when I talk about respect, being respected and your level of self-respect and a degree of resilience. So resilience means that you have a certain amount of capacity to stretch yourself out, or be elastic to adapt to the dynamics that you come across. Initially, Yeah, I would say the ego wants to be right because we're threatened when we're perceived as being wrong. We feel small. We feel that if that happens once or twice, then people won't respect us in the future. Mm-hmm. But the in some way or another, we want to have this recognition where we are connecting with other people. But the problem is sometimes we cloud what that looks like. And we're coming from a place that is still, even though we think we're demonstrating that we want to connect with somebody at a deeper level, we're coming from a place that is still self-serving. And people feel that. And other people don't feel welcome, even though we perceive that they're not welcoming of us, then a lot of tension comes to the surface. So it's really about going a little bit more. It's about going deeper into where you're at, that self-awareness piece, and being able to unpack what your tendencies might be. Mm-hmm. Get out of whether it's sort of that longer term construct of where you want your life to go, or in the immediate, that if it is an example, like you said, about the need to be right.
Well, now, do you think that there are some people that just seem to attract conflict more than others?
I think that everything is internal. That just as I pointed to that recognition, respect, and resilience, mm-hmm. Breaking it down type of formula of what these touch upon are really fundamental human needs. People that haven't been able to recognize the importance of gaining a deeper level of self-awareness, of recognizing what their patterns are and realizing that there's work to be done, then that's a magnet for conflict. Mm-hmm. Because the whole point is that if we don't take the time to go in that direction and recognize what's happening with us, recognizing the work that we can do, then it's just an automatic formula in that direction. To say that it's only certain people, it's certain people who were not prepared to go there. And we could actually reposition that and say that those people that at some level are willing to use life experience and gain a bit more clarity as to what's happening in these dynamics as an opportunity to refine them, then we could shift that whole, the way of capturing that, okay, these were the dynamics I found myself in, at so-and-so point. But, you know, if I just gain a little bit more clarity, if I make a commitment to myself, then I'm not sentenced, so to speak, to live those dynamics the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's something that you've said before. It's taking us from a position of being, you know, going through life in a very unconscious way. But when we're seeing that these conflicts keep arising, use them as little red flags to kind of, like, they're there to kind of point you in a direction that there's something that needs to be looked at.
Yes.
And, you know, take us out of that unconscious living, because I think we just get caught up in, you know, either what you call it, like we're in a rut or just in a like on that hamster wheel. And we just kind of, oh, this is all that life is. And, you know, this is just what it is. I have to make the best of it. But we can make some conscious decisions to shift that. It doesn't always have to be that way. And if you got that conflict constantly coming up, it's kind of like, hey, hello, you know, this could change if you really wanted to. But it's that awareness, like you said, it's that really being able to look at ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. When something that was important that you mentioned, well, firstly, with judgment is so key. I think even that related point about, oh, this is the way life is. When people begin to say that is often, that's an expression that's anchored in judgment, mm-hmm. that they might realize that there's something that needs to be done. And the awareness, again, of course, is foundationally important. But too many times defaulting to saying that's life or this is just the way things are is not helpful. That any level of judgment sort of, when we bring self-awareness into self-compassion, because a big thing, again, that I mentioned before about conflict often starts because we're protecting ourselves because of some level of fear. And so that's clouded with judgment. But if we can't have any self-compassion or a minimal level of self-compassion, it's difficult to be able to refine our dynamics with other people. We need to begin with ourselves. The reactions, those knee-jerking reactions that we have with other people, where there's this energy of blame and pointing the finger, that really still comes back to ourselves, because there's just not that capacity at that time to recognize that there's a bit more to who we are than this sort of back and forth ego dynamic. So it really is as you described, using life experience as an opportunity. I like to say using life experiences as an opportunity to nudge us. Mm-hmm. It's really you said the red flags, really nudging us in the right direction. Okay, I may not have been so self-aware in this moment, but I'm a bit more clear based on what happened to take this in another direction. And I actually have an acronym for that. That conflict is an opportunity for reflective exploration. It's just an opportunity that we're presented over and over again. And it's up to us to realize that we could be more clear. We could engage at a level that diffuses it.
Well, definitely. And like you were saying there, when we get into that motion of wanting to blame and point fingers, I don't know who originally said it, but it's something that's always stuck with me. Is when we're pointing the finger to blame someone else, we have to remember that there's three other fingers pointing back at us.
Exactly. And what we're talking about is shame.
Yeah.
Like it's the initial shame that we're feeling. And that's why self-compassion is so important. If we could in the moment feel that and feel those emotions of even feeling small, if it come to the surface, even if we feel threatened in some way, allow that to dissolve a little bit. Pause. Don't react right away. And then even in that moment, let alone another opportunity, there could be a more refined response that will set us on a new course in life.
Well, do you find that in what you've seen with people that you work with, that, you know, when it comes to conflict, it has a tendency to kind of bleed into other areas of our lives? Like, say, maybe you're having major conflict at work, but that conflict doesn't just stay there. It doesn't stay in that little compartment. It then, you know, could end up coming home with you. It could start affecting your health. Could you talk a little bit more about the, you know, all the, how it interrelates to the other parts of your life?
Absolutely. I don't see conflict as separate. You know, some people compartmentalize personal and professional conflicts. Mm-hmm. The same conflicts that your partner will call you on, a close friend might call you on, but will, in other instances, they'll provide you with a little bit more time and space to you know, improve your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The conflicts that happen at work are very, very similar, because until you recognize, again, that moment of pausing, recognizing what's coming, almost coming through you as a reaction, and then the reaction itself and everything in between, until that moment, we're going to be looping back into these patterns over and over again until that capacity to recognize that refinement is needed. It's just in the workplace, there's more that's on the line, because there are people, of course, everybody is there to play their roles effectively. Everybody is on a team to make sure that the overall objective that's needing to be met ties into their specific role. And so, you know, there's limited time and people are less forgiving. So it might be even more transparent in that context, but the tendencies are very, very similar. So if there was a professional development workshop at work that touched in or touched upon emotional intelligence, interpersonal related skills, personality related work, and there was a commitment by an individual who attended that workshop to integrate what was being taught and to bring it into their daily behavior, then they might find that there's a lot of benefit in their personal relationship. Or conversely, if a couple decided to get some form of counseling and learned a few methods that allow them to communicate more effectively, to recognize the other person's needs, they might find themselves really improving how they're relating to people in their professional space. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all foundationally part of the same thing.
And would you say that being able to deal with conflict, whether it's business or professional, in a healthy way is actually a leadership skill?
Well, we need to define what a healthy way means, because I know what you're referring to as healthy, but of course this ties into having the emotional intelligence to recognize where you're coming from. If we place that in terms of a leader who makes a commitment for personal growth and self-awareness as part of their lifestyle, then naturally they would be modeling. They would be modeling, I think, in professional settings, I think in different circles that they find themselves in. They're modeling that for other people, and people feel that. So in some cases, it's behaviors that people could pick up on. In some cases, it's just what we were talking about right at the beginning. This openness, this welcoming that other people feel that they can naturally gravitate towards that individual just because that's the capacity to hold space. That's the capacity to be there. But the reason why In another context, the term healthy may not be the most appropriate or constructive for us is because, you know, in the context of the work that I do and what I've already described as each life experience is an opportunity for refinement. Mm-hmm. Let's not call it healthy. Let's just see where we could go a little bit further as to gaining clarity as to how we're reacting, gaining clarity as to what we can learn from another person, how maybe in the next instance there's something that we could say that might, where our tone might be a little bit more welcoming, where we might be not gesticulating in a way that is offensive. You know, you have to really consider how this comes up in the moment. Tone, your gaze, your body language, all these subtle things that completely reposition a conflict if you gain clarity. So it's really the moment to moment, example by example time. And then maybe if we've gained clarity over a number of months or even well over a year, if we've made that commitment initially, then we could log it and we could see what our progress has been. And then we could say, oh, this overall has been much more healthy.
Well, now some people may think that when it comes to dealing with conflict within their business or personal relationships, they would just want to take care of it on their own. But what is the benefit of having a third party like yourself come in and help facilitate the process?
Well, there are a couple of things. People want to take care of it on their own. They might see that as outside of the realm, so to speak, of their workplace. That, you know, this is something we'll get to. And it's really, I think a lot of people, and I've come across this, and this is not uncommon in the type of world that we live in, where the specialists that come in and do training around more of the standard, the business development, how could we be more productive and more profitable? How could we reach bottom line? Even if that might be translatable in another context of other organizations that are just, they're just looking to maximize their resources, not necessarily the finalized bottom line in other contexts. That orientation could perpetuate a lot of the same problems. What I say is that if you begin with having training or even entering difficult conversations that you feel are needed, if you're willing to go there as an organization, then that foundationally, because, and if there is commitment, everybody has to take ownership over the process, that will lead towards communicating more clearly, more effectively, understanding where other people are coming from. And you most likely wouldn't have to be focused on working so hard, because it wouldn't be as hard work to take care of your roles. Over 65% of workplace conflicts come through the inability of people to be able to communicate in sometimes very simple everyday ways with their colleagues, that with a little clarity, with a little work, that could be shifted in another direction. So really that commitment to these other areas. And that's why the term soft skills, and that's why organizations have been recognizing the need to address these soft skills. That's foundationally where we need to go to as far as where we're at as human beings. That can literally lead in the right direction.
Definitely. Now, do you have any sort of tip or strategy that you could share with the listeners that they could implement right away that could help them when conflict arises?
I think it's an opportunity when conflict arises to, as I've mentioned before, because if I could just reposition that for a second, very, very often, and this is natural, it's a tendency on one level or another that we all have. We look at what's working well in our lives, and then there's a part of us that still wants to focus on something else that is that area that still needs improvement, even without recognizing the benefits. So having the clarity to understand what your strengths are, how far you've come in other areas, I think is really key. Just in general, however that might look to you. And with the experiences, and as far as I described before, that come up that you're familiar with related to conflict, see that as, I think, having a really constructive challenge where every conflict experience is a new opportunity. or I shouldn't say conflict experience. Every interaction is an opportunity, as I said before, to gain clarity. The solutions are in the process. There are no shortcuts. We all want to have these magic bullets. Of course, who wants to get into these situations that make us feel uncomfortable? And we need to recognize that. So foundationally, have some self-compassion that, yeah, this is normal. This is something that will be challenging. But at least if we make a commitment to recognize, again, how we're reacting in the moment, what we can learn from it, how we can refine our experience, and something that, as a tool, and I think we've discussed this before, that's really valuable. And when you pause and you step back, you don't need to necessarily be in a situation where you are. The way I put conflict is reacting. Interacting respectfully is responding. You don't necessarily need to always have your comeback or always one-up the next person. You could pause and say, oh, excuse me, and then just have a moment where you're actually reflecting on what the initial thing that happened. And then you could come back and say, I'd like to discuss this and discuss this openly. As a tool, that something that you could use when you are stepping outside of that dynamic and excusing yourself, there's the 3-6-9 breath that we also talked about. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you actually breathe deeply for a moment, hold your breath, and then allow yourself to gradually exhale. And this is actually, you know, you get more oxygen to the brain. You could think a bit more clearly. You could relate more openly if you do this. So that's a really, really great tool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say it's one of my favorite ones. I use it for, I say any type of situation, whether I'm, you know, say feeling just stressed or even just in conflict with myself about something and I just need to calm and relax. It's a great tool.
Yeah, it really is a fantastic tool. And I just want to add, it's come up a few times. For those people who have gravitated towards authors like Brené Brown, mm-hmm. Kristen Neff is really important. Of course, Brené Brown talks about vulnerability and imperfectionism, and those are all the areas of shame that we experience. We need it as individuals, I think, as a society, let go of that, this need to be perfect in every single area of our lives when we're limited as far as time management. Kristen Neff really emphasizes the need for self-compassion. So that self-compassion that we can realize in the moment, that we can realize in more and more areas of our lives, if we make a commitment to deepen that, conflict will diffuse. Conflict will naturally not be as much a part of what we're experiencing. So I think, you know, a great tool, of course, in the moment, breathe a little bit more deeply, but recognize that it's okay if we get into some conflicts here and there. It's natural. We can learn to embrace them at another level because, again, they provide us with the learning that we need. They didn't happen accidentally. So those are some valuable tools, a valuable context that I provide for my clients.
So if some listeners are thinking that they could really use your support and expertise, what ways do you offer to work with people?
Well, I actually do have a promotion right now for listeners that the type of training I do work with organizations where I weave in aspects of emotional intelligence, relational enhancement, interpersonal development with team building and core conflict resolution and transformation skills. But I also, this type of approach is used with my coaching. I'm offering a 20-minute free promotional coaching session for your listeners. And if this is something that speaks to you, you can contact me and we could perhaps discuss having longer sessions. And I always tailor it very closely to the needs of my clients. So that is one thing that I am going to be doing. I also have a couple of courses coming up that will involve probably about 12 to 15 people that go into many of these steps. I spoke about the need for recognition, respect, and resilience. And resilience as far as that elasticity we could develop in the moment of conflict. So deepening people's capacity to be able to go in that direction. So a course will come up, which I hope to be holding in about 2 months from now.
Okay.
So, and the last thing is an online course, which many of us have wanted to do, but I've had quite a bit on my plate, so I haven't been able to refine the components myself of the course exactly the way I want them to be, even though there's quite a bit foundationally that's there. So, yeah, so that there's still that stay tuned for listeners component. Yeah, you could email me at info@robhershorn.com. My Twitter handle is @RobHershorn, and I would love to follow up with you. So,
well, perfect, because you just answered my next question was how people could contact you. So that's awesome. Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad that I could be a step ahead.
There you go.
but you could still ask me that question because I left one contact piece out of it.
Okay, so if people would like to connect with you personally, what is the best way?
There are those two areas. Also, just to get an even more of a sense of what I do, and my testimonials are found in this space on my website. If you go to robhershorn.com, you can really see directly how people have benefited from the work that I've done. And I definitely would encourage listeners, if there are any associations or groups that you feel that would benefit from aspects of what you heard today, then I do speaking all the time. So, yeah, so that would be another component right there.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Rob, for being here on the summit with us today and for opening up our eyes and minds as to the impact that conflict has on our lives.
Thank you so much, Sheila. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
Awesome. Well, today on the Holistic Life Summit, we have been talking with relational enhancement and interpersonal development specialist, Rob Hershorn. If you are dealing with a lot of conflict in your business or personal life and feel that you could use Rob's support and expertise, please connect with him on his website, robhershorn.com, and start your journey to having a more clear relationship with conflict when it arises. Do you know people that you think could benefit from the knowledge that you received from today's summit episode or from the ones to come? Please share the link of reigniteyourpurpose.com/holisticlifesummit and invite them to join in on the conversation. If you received a great tip that resonated with you, please post it on your social media using the hashtag #HolisticLifeSummit. Come back tomorrow where we will continue putting all of life's challenging puzzle pieces into place. Until then, this is Life Mastery Coach Sheila wishing you a happy, healthy, and whole day.